the lane, crosses up Van Vliet, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get on a rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three.
No,
she's
good.
She got it. Kansas Sykes for three.
From local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Happy Thursday, birds. Welcome into this edition of the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation. Braden Fogerson, David Moses, and Mikey Frinelli coming at you from the WZND studio. Maybe it's because we had spring break last week, but I also think we weren't the full crew last time we had this show, too. This is the first time in a while we've had all three of us back, because then we had the postseason basketball tournaments. So it's good to be sitting back at this table with both you gentlemen.
Yeah, it's been a minute. You know, we went down to St. Louis, mm-hmm. and we came back, and we only was...
That's true.
What, 20 minutes of a segment, and then I think I wasn't here 1 week,
yeah.
and then we had spring break.
Yeah.
We haven't been together for a minute, so
here we are.
I'm glad to be back with the crew.
I think you're right. That was the last time all three of us were here together when we also had Julie and Kaylee and Blake here for the six-person segment.
Yeah, I'm just glad to be able to have the three of us back, get it back to normal, because there was just kind of a lot of stuff going on
yeah.
all at once. I was glad that I was able to be here the following Thursday night right before Tim and I left for our tournament, but it's just kind of been a long spring break, and now it's time to get back into the swing of things. So
we're going to talk a lot today about a couple different things, because in those 2 weeks that we missed, kind of, there was a lot that went down. We have some Redbird women's basketball to cover. We have some NFL draft stuff to cover and some Bears stuff. We have an MLB preview for you. March Madness, the whole first two rounds, and another round kicking off tonight. And also, the Tom Brady rumor mill is going, because minutes before the show started, he acquired some ownership stake in the Las Vegas Aces, the WNBA champs. So, Brady to the Raiders, Braden Fogerson?
it's past time, man. They found... I think we'll talk about it in our next segment maybe a little bit. I know you guys want to talk a lot about the Bears, but it's a really, really rough time to be a Raider fan
because they're trying to make them a dynasty
that happened 20 years ago.
They just signed Garoppolo so Brady could have his backup he's won with before. It's not.
I'll tell you, looking at everybody else's teams, it just makes me so appreciative to have Ryan Poles as a general manager. Mm. You know, I'm very fortunate right now to be a Bears fan.
We got 15 minutes of that coming at you at about 6:15, but first, let's start with a little bit of a Redbird women's basketball recap. So David and I went to St. Louis to cover the men's tournament. Braden and Tim went to the women's tournament in Moline. And after a Friday victory, they ended up falling by, I think it was 30 points to Drake, right, on Saturday of that tournament?
Yeah, it was pretty miserable. But Drake ended up winning that tournament. They also were able to move on to, because they won the tournament, automatic bid to the NCAA tournament, mm-hmm. where they lost by just 2 to Louisville. That was a fantastic game and really put on some fireworks to show off the talent that the Missouri Valley has to offer. Really just kind of a fantastic couple week for Drake athletics in general,
yeah.
But also several heartbreaking losses for both of those Drake teams. So, you know, they'll certainly be happy about being able to make the tournament, but it's not quite as big a heartbreaker as losing back-to-back huge tournament games, like right in a row.
So what's interesting is then, because of that ISU loss to Drake, they did still get a bid to the WNIT because of their regular season title, but they ended up losing to Missouri in a close game. I think it was, I'm looking at the score now, 61-51. And so that game, that score does not show it, though, because with about a minute left, it was way closer. They ended up fouling Missouri to try and get a chance in that one. But the big note in that one, 0 for 8 from the field, Missouri Valley Conference Player of the Year, Paige Robinson. David, you're nodding along with me. That's tough in your last game of the season.
And you know, you hate to see it because, you know, when I'm highlighting, you know, key seniors that are leaving, Paige Robinson is at the top of that list, and I would be remiss to not even mention her. you know, the team's leading scorer with 18 points per game. She's a natural baller, and in some ways, she carried the team, you know, throughout the season in so many ways. ISU's going to have their, you know, plates full trying to replace her next year. You know, it sucks that she went out that way in her last game, but, you know, it does not subside all that she's done in a Redbird uniform.
Yes, and it also doesn't decide what the team has done. Greatest regular season under Kristen Gillespie. As you said, Paige Robinson, one of the first Redbirds to win that Player of the Conference Award. Mary Crompton also got a great award. Deanna Wilson, Defensive Player of the Year. So there was a lot to be proud of with this season for the Redbird women's team. And I think our very own Braden Fogerson has some audio of some of your favorite players and Coach Gillespie talking about what a season it was.
After a regular season in which ISU women's basketball earned a share of the Missouri Valley title, expectations were high for the one-seeded Redbirds. However, their tournament run ended prematurely with a loss to the eventual champions of the tournament, Drake. Head coach Kristen Gillespie reflects on the team's impact on the community.
One game doesn't define the team, and it just, it stinks that this has happened to be our last game. But what this team has done is unbelievable. They have ignited our fan base. They have just, the impact they've made on our community, on young people, on our campus. They have brought Illinois State back to where it needs to be.
Senior Deanna Wilson reflects on what was still a strong season to end her tenure in red and white.
This whole year has been so fun, like different memories, the different, like, I just can't, like, the fans between my coaches, my teammates, and everybody's, Leanna, Kennedy, like, everybody makes everything so great. That's what's Illinois State. Like, you can't get another feel for that anywhere else. So, like, my senior year was top tier.
The tears held off on falling until Kate Bowman got to talk about what the team meant to her.
Literally the only thing that makes me emotional thinking about is just how much I love everybody and how fun it's been to play. It's hard to put into words what it means, how much we love each other and how much this sucks, because I don't know, you know, if I'm going to get to play with this group or a majority of this group again. So, I mean, it's meant everything to me. It's hard to put into words.
Following the events of the tournament in Moline, the Redbirds went to play in the NIT, losing a close game on the road to Missouri. For WZND and the Red Zone, I'm Braden Fogerson.
For WZND and the Red Zone, that's Braden Fogerson. Now he joins us live in the studio, as if he isn't always here, to talk about the Redbird women's basketball team. But yeah, Braden, great piece there. And we were talking about while that was playing with the mics off, that was right after they lost to Drake. So to have them already kind of had their thoughts about themselves and thank the right people and realize what a great season it was. I know you had said Kristen was not, at that point, though, she was pretty confident, like, stop saying it's over. You want to go into that a little bit
more? Yeah, you get the sense that that was what the talk was during the 10-minute cool-down section that they had before they have media availability. There was also a little bit of a time where one of the, I can't remember if it was Kate, I think it might have been Kate that stumbled and said that it was Deanna. But anyway, Deanna stumbled and said, like, kind of implied that the season was over, and then stopped herself. And then Kate jumped in and said, yeah, don't act like the season's over. So it seems like that must have been the post-game talk from Coach Gillespie, was that, you know, the season's not done yet. They still have more basketball left to play. And so to be able to go into the NIT and face a team as tough as Missouri must have been, you know, they wanted to be able to have the right mindset for that, even with as frustrated as they must have been after that performance.
And even with the season being over, they still do have a lot of basketball left to play. It was a great season overall, and I think this program as a whole grew. You could hear it in how the fans reacted, how students reacted and came to games in support. They built a strong foundation here, even off the basketball court. I'm excited to see what Coach Gillespie is going to do with this team going forward, even though they've lost, you know, some really key players, Deanna Wilson, Mary Crompton, Paige Robinson, and a couple others. It's going to be tough to fill those shoes, but I have no doubt that they can. You know, the smarts and the expertise of Coach Gillespie has already been shown, so I'm excited to see how she, you know, moves her chess pieces on her chessboard.
Yeah, I mean, everyone always said, the big thing before this year, right? How are the Redbirds going to replace Juju Redmond? How are they going to do it? Like, there's no way you can replace Juju. She was a star. And they did, and Paige Robinson. And we talk about the issues of the transfer portal for mid-major schools, but also they also have the ability to bring in players from even smaller mid-majors and even D2, like where they found Paige Robinson. So, yeah, Gillespie had a great season that will look good to recruits. We can think of that going forward. But personally, I think there will always be a little bit of a moment where when I think of the season, I think, wow, that was a great year, but man, what could have been?
And success leads to more success, too, when you've got new recruits that are looking, you know, especially from this area, people that just play really, really well in women's basketball that are looking to make it to that next level. One of the first places they're going to be looking now is Illinois State, because they saw these past several seasons. They were able to come from a four seed to win the MVC tournament a year ago, and then this time they did everything but win the MVC tournament to prove how much talent they had. This team has been really, really good for a long time, and the depth and the bench that this team had, even despite all the stars that are going to be leaving, tells me that they've got a lot of framework to work with, and then the rest of the way is just finding some of those extra pieces to make those replacements, because this team is really good even now.
So even with that, I think it's going to be interesting this, you know, during this off season to see how recruiting goes, how aggressive Coach Gillespie is in recruiting, you know, at outside schools, because you know, you, like you just said, Brayton, depth is important. If we don't have depth, you know, that starting lineup is not going to be able to carry you throughout a whole season. So recruiting is going to be definitely interesting to see how they handle that this offseason. And, you know, it's going to tell a lot to how, you know, the Redbirds are able to succeed next season.
I think it's kind of weird that ISU didn't get a home game in the WNIT. I think we were all kind of expecting it, being a conference champion and in a smaller bracket. You kind of thought ISU would get a little bit of an easier round one game, but maybe it's a good thing at the end of the day, because I hate to say it, but Missouri then went on to lose in the second round to Kansas 75-47 in the WNIT second round. Kansas will actually play Nebraska tonight in the second or in the third round of the WNIT. But yeah, I mean, Brayden, you and I were texting a lot about it over spring break, obviously, you and I and Tim, discussing if we would be covering WNIT, discussing, you know, the loss and the plan from here. And I just don't think it was somewhere we thought we'd be, where we are not expecting them in March Madness. I think that was kind of the expectation. To see it fall a little bit short was pretty disappointing.
Yeah, it's disappointing, but sometimes that's just how the chips fall, and that's why you play the games, because, like I said, if this team the year prior had just let it be whoever, you know, just let Chalk win and the one seed will get to win, then they wouldn't have been Missouri Valley Conference champions a year ago, so you win some, you lose some.
It's March. It's madness. We'll get onto it later in the show. But first, we're going to come back and talk a little bit about the NFL and football. And, of course, the Chicago Bears. As David said, our Lord and Savior Ryan Poles and all that he's doing to help the Chicago Bears roster. You're listening to The Red Zone.
This is Barstool Big Cat, and you're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to The Red Zone here on 103.3 WZND. In the last week or so of not having a show, it really has seemed like during spring break, every time I check my phone, the Bears had signed another great addition to this Bears team. I think the only person they haven't signed yet is former brother Rice Dano, David Moses. I mean, that's the key you need for your defense, in my opinion. But David Moses, since you're not signed yet, since you've gone in more the analyst route, what do you think your favorite moves have been so far for Ryan Poles in this Bears roster during free agency?
It's been like, oh my goodness, I can't even. Oh my God, I wish we had a show last week, because the emotions I had, you know, just seeing these picks come off the board.
You guys were texting nonstop. I was visiting my grandpa in Florida, and I wish I could have read all of them, but every time I check my phone.
Such a roller coaster of emotions. Honestly, although the picks, I think, were so beneficial to our team, DJ Moore probably is my favorite one right now, because, you know, when you talk about the NFL, you know, Joe Burrow's got Ja'Marr Chase, Pat Mahomes got Travis Kelce, Justin Fields needs somebody. I think DJ Moore can be the guy. I'm not saying Darnell Mooney can't. I actually think Darnell Mooney's going to have a really bounce back year after all of these additions to kind of take some of the attention off of him. So,
yeah,
you know, really good offseason. I liked all the moves, but DJ Moore's probably my favorite one.
I like the Robert Tonyan thing, too.
Oh, yeah.
He's a local guy. Oh, yeah. They're making the North Side Suburbs team now with Jacksonville and Robert Tonyan and a bunch of others. But no, I like that signing a lot. I like taking that away from the Packers too. I like all the defensive moves we've made. Like you said, I like DJ Moore. And I like where we ended up in the draft even after getting DJ Moore. Ninth is pretty solid, and then also their first rounder next year. That is a great job by Ryan Poles.
Yeah, I don't think this draft is very strong in terms of obvious hits, and I feel like if the Bears weren't looking for a quarterback, the best thing they can do from the one is find themselves as much value as they can. And to be able to go, you know, anyone can trade the pick to the third or fourth pick. But if you can trade to the ninth, whoever is sitting at ninth, they're going to have to give you a lot of value in return. And I think for the Bears, that's a big, big deal, because Fields, we know, has plenty of talent. It's just about getting people around him, and they're starting to get that going now.
And, you know, they set themselves up pretty well for the future, like you said. They got that first rounder and next round's draft pick from Carolina. You know, Carolina's not the most talented team. I know they, you know, maybe a fringe 500 team, but, you know, that's a potential top 15, top 10 pick right there in the next draft as well, along with your current first draft. You're looking at two first round draft picks next year.
Yeah, and if you go this season, and if we get to about the deadline area of this season, it looks great for the Bears. There's a case to be made for, if the Panthers are terrible and the Bears are doing pretty good, use the picks you have to start making some deals and make the team even better, and then you can always fall back on, oh, we at least still have the Panthers pick. I'm not saying trade away your already first-round pick. I'm saying if there's a great deal out there for you, it's not like you don't have two.
But are the expectations high now, or is this like you've got one bridge year where you're just kind of getting the idea of what this roster will look like now?
And probably more of the latter.
The next year.
It's really interesting you say that. I think, you know, a lot of people are looking at all these moves we've made so far, and they're jumping the gun as if we're a playoff. It's still not a playoff team. I'm just going to be real. You know, the interior D-line is non-existing. You still got Justin Jones leading the way for them. Linebacker room is probably the most improved position. You know, you still got holes in the secondary. You need a slot cornerback. The Bears still have work to do. They're not a playoff team just yet. So I think when you look at it, you know, this draft is going to be pretty big. But, you know, I'm not going into next year thinking, oh, you know, this is a Super Bowl caliber team. You know, we can compete for maybe a wild card round or something like that. But definitely, you know, a long way to go, like, to answer your question. Yeah.
So is there one guy who you think the Bears have their eyes on when they traded back to the ninth pick? Is there someone who they're comfortable enough saying, yeah, he'll still be there if they were able to trade away? Well, I mean, they obviously did already trade back for the ninth pick. Do they have their mindset on one person, or is it kind of like see how that falls and then figure it out?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a see how they falls type of situation. Because honestly, I think that there's one player that they really want, but they don't want to admit it out loud. I think you all know where I'm going with this. And then there's some obvious picks that you can go maybe on the offensive line with, Paris Johnson. He had an amazing pro day.
Paris Johnson is who I keep seeing in all the mock drafts, and that would help the line
together.
Yeah,
it really
would. Sure.
Or the guy from Northwestern, Peter Skoronski or something like that. But I think if he falls to them and it makes sense, Jalen Carter could potentially be a Bear despite his off-the-field, you know, controversy. I think that the Bears like him. Like I said, the interior D-line really needs some help, and that's, you know, you can't ignore the fact that he's still a generational-type talent, in my opinion.
So it was interesting listening to it's funny you played the Big Cat Bump before this, because listening to Eberflus and Ryan Poles on Pardon My Takes, they were talking about how, like, half of their 15 minutes with every, you know, top draft prospect was literally just determining their character while playing mini golf. They had like a I don't know.
I love that.
Yeah, I think you saw something about this, but like there was like a little like putt thing set up in their box in Lucas Oil Stadium, and they would just like Flus and the prospect would just putt, and they'd all hang out, and like that's how they judged character. And so I don't think they're really paying. I mean, the whole Jalen Carter thing, it's going to be what it is, but I don't even think they're really even judging character based on any other notions. I mean, that obviously any kind of off-the-field criminal activity is obviously more than just people saying things, but I think they have their own judgment of character, so I'd be interested to see what they think about half these guys that they're looking at.
Because, you know, the thing is, I think they're interested in him. They're inviting him for a private workout. I think they went to visit him on his pro day. So,
yeah,
you know, it's evident that they have some interest in him. And then they also, I think they're just in the the defensive tackle market as well, because they did go to Clemson to go see Brian Brisee. So I think that they just need some big guys over there. One of the players I would like to see them go for is Siaki Ika. Ika out of Notre Dame, big guy up the middle. I think, you know, he reminds you of a Vita Vea. So I don't know. It's a lot of moves that the Bears can make this offseason. I think they've done a tremendous job so far. But it's going to be interesting to see how they play this draft out.
And guys, two words here. Laramie Tunsil. I don't think that there's any better example of someone that right before the draft kind of just got, you know, the big storyline that, you know, that picture that surfaced right before the draft.
Right before
the draft. And then, like, oh, well, this guy's going to fall to wherever. And then now the storyline, he just got re-signed, is that what did we think? Like, why were we thinking this? Tunsil has been fantastic. If you have a player that talented, you know, it's really frustrating to say that you're going to let someone that talented go just because of some off-the-field things. Obviously, they're still concerning, but you don't want to miss out on a talent like that just because of letting self-doubt creep in.
Like, I don't think people are realizing when we say generational-type talent, he genuinely is. This is a player that people are even saying that if he was in last year's draft, he could have went ahead of Jordan Davis, who played alongside him at Georgia. So I think that, you know, if he falls to that number nine spot, it's going to be a very intriguing decision for Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus to make. So I would keep an eye out for that for sure.
All-time quote here on NFL.com by Laremy Tunsil after he got that new contract from the Texans. He said, "I did it my way like Frank Sinatra." That's an all-time quote. And, yeah, good for him to get that extension. But, okay, we'll go a little bit Bears-wide here. There's 31 other teams we could talk about. I think let's start with the Las Vegas Raiders, Braden Fogerson's favorite team, and their new quarterback, Jimmy Garoppolo. Where are we at on that?
It's just so sad.
I hyped that up so much for you just to go with
this team. I'm trying not to be negative. I'm trying my best not to be negative. You get rid of Derek Carr, who's been... He's not going to get you that ceiling where you can compete with Mahomes. And I can completely accept that. I'm completely fine with that. But you replace him with Jimmy Garoppolo at 3 years and what, like $73 million? You are not upping your ceiling at all, and you are paying him quite a lot to do it. He's had injury problems coming off of a team that just was horrendous in terms of allowing injuries the past several years. And, you know, what's the best you can get out of him? You cannot win the AFC West with Patrick Mahomes, with this team that was so far off, they were letting their opponents play, like, childhood playground games in the middle of an AFC West rivalry game. They're playing Ring Around the Rosie against you, and you think you can solve the problem by replacing Derek Carr with Jimmy Garoppolo? You need a whole lot more difference than that. And to me, I just feel like they're trying to become the Patriots, a lot like what the Lions did when they were like, oh, let's just add like one tight end that looks like Gronk. Maybe that'll work. It takes so much more than that with a roster of 53 people to turn a team into a dynasty. And frankly, turning into a dynasty that's 20 years old isn't really going to work out anyway.
I know how they can become the Patriots. Mark Davis is a new friend in the ownership group with the Las Vegas Aces. So they already signed his backup. So let's see see year 23 or whatever it would be.
Please, no.
Okay, so, no, I'm being sarcastic about Brady. But yeah. what do you think, honestly, is something the Raiders can do to make you feel a little bit more confident going into this season? Or are you just perpetually kind of like, there's no way they're going to be better than the Chiefs?
I feel like, be realistic about it. They had themselves movements that they were making that were kind of... I mean, when you lose your ownership, they fired Reggie McKenzie and then replaced him with a guy from NFL Network, and then you get rid of the guy from NFL Network when he's finally gotten something kind of going, but kind of a bad rap for draft picks except for a few key hits. If you just continually change the coach, if you continually change the narrative and the culture of a team, the team is never going to get a foothold set. And when you have a continuous team that's just always at the top that you are going to have to deal with, when everyone keeps trying to push the Chargers as well every single offseason, it takes... You can't continually just change and just pull the rug out of your entire team that often, because it's going to take, you got to find someone that can finally work, that is likable, and just stick with them instead of continually changing all the time, because you just need some stability for once.
You know, I think it's really crazy how these NFL GMs overcomplicate things, because when you think about it, it's simple. You face Justin Herbert twice a year, Patrick Mahomes twice a year. You're not beating those two quarterbacks with Jimmy Garoppolo. If you weren't doing it with Derek Carr, you're not doing it with Jimmy Garoppolo. I would have loved to see the Raiders, you know, hop in that quarterback conversation in the draft. doesn't look like they're going to go that way. They might. What do you think? I don't know. What do they need in the draft? What pick do they have?
Well, now that they've got Garoppolo, I don't expect them to be going for QB anyway. But I feel like there's just adding linemen, adding to that defense, especially because the defense has just been continuously known as bad. There's always ways to improve your defense on this Raider team.
Excuse me, David. You forgot about one of the AFC West quarterbacks. Who was it? You know who it is. You know exactly who it is that you forgot to mention. We have his audio still on the board. Please play it.
Broncos country. Let's
ride. There he is, Russell Wilson. Never taking that audio off the board. But no,
I cannot forget Russell Wilson, man.
I've been joking around too much this NFL segment. I'm Dane basically this episode. But no, but we're you know, you guys are totally right about that. With how GMs just need to be able to find a way to at least be competitive and not let the team and the Chiefs do ring around the rosy on you in a game that matters for both teams, because I think the Chiefs were still playing for the one seed or something like that at that point, right?
Yeah.
So it was not like the Chiefs were, you know, second team in it, and that was so disrespectful. Like, it made me feel, I'm sorry, Brayden, but that one play made me feel at least okay about being a Bears fan for one moment.
Yeah,
because it's like
that made the "I own you" from Aaron Rodgers look
say, like,
so weird.
I can imagine that probably made the Raiders fans feel exactly how I felt when Rodgers did the "I own you" thing, and. Well,
I was heading to my brother's basketball game, so I didn't get to see it. I got to listen to them say it on the radio broadcast, and he said "ring around the rosy," and I was saying, "Are you sure? Like, he made a mistake. Like, that's probably something that he just called it the wrong thing." I look back on it. No, he's completely correct. They're playing "ring around the rosy" on the football field.
Our NFL conversation is going to have to bleed into next week. So we didn't even touch on Aaron Rodgers. Hopefully by then we know what team.
We know
what team he'll be playing for. Hopefully by next week. When we come back, we're going to get into the MLB and March Madness. You're listening to the Red Zone.
Hey, this is Dickie V, baby, and you're listening to the Red Zone, baby, only on 103.3 WZMD.
Welcome back to the Red Zone here on 103.3 WZMD. David Moses, Brayden Fogerson, I'm Mikey Frinelli, and joining us now for the second half of the show is Joey LeMaster. He's one of the new interns here in our staff, and Joey, welcome to the show. It's your first time, right?
It is my first time. It's an honor, especially to share it with you guys.
Oh, well, thanks, Joey.
No problem.
The Chicago Cubs and the White Sox and the Cardinals are going to be the main focus today. I say we start with the Cubs, who got a big win today in spring training against the Diamondbacks. I saw that. And are headed into the season at an interesting point. Hayden Wesneski got the start today. Looked really good as well. And I'll let one of you guys take it over. I'll say, Joey, you take it over for us.
Okay.
Tell me what's going to happen this year for the Chicago Cubs.
Well, this Cubs team is reminding me like the one year the Bulls, they won the Summer League Championship with like Denzel Valentine at the ball.
Denzel Valentine at the home.
That's what the reminder I have is, like, we're off to a hot start, but like we don't really do much in the season. But I have a little bit of higher expectations for the Cubs because, you know, Bellinger, he's hitting home runs after he was supposed to be washed or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think we can make a push for a wild card appearance. But again, I'm not setting my hopes too high because, like with the Cubs, with the Bears, and currently with the Bulls, like, I get disappointed a lot. Mm-hmm. So I learned not to set the expectations too high. But I think the Cubs, we can make a wild card push. And if we don't, we're in a contender, and Ohtani demands his trade. Don't be surprised when Ohtani's at Wrigley Field next year. You heard it here first.
Too true.
The Ohtani-Suzuki connection is going to be legal.
See, you just gave me goosebumps.
No, I mean, okay, I have to take a second here. I got to mention it. The World Baseball Classic was awesome. I don't know if anyone else here was watching it, but
it was scripted.
Chilling, bro.
For anyone to say that that's meaningless baseball after watching those couple games, I don't know how. Like,
you can't.
Yeah, you couldn't write it better. Like, for a sport that it's the one, I loved what the analyst said during that game. It's the one sport where you can't pick in the final moment to have the best player on the field. Like, you know, you can't pick Tom Brady to drive the ball. You can't pick Michael Jordan to take the shot. You just have to hope it's the right spot in the lineup. And to have Shohei Ohtani facing Mike Trout for it all, I mean, sure, the Japanese won, and it was really cool. Good for them. I was rooting for the U.S. team. But either way, incredible game, incredible series, and I just got to shout it out that I'm so ready for more baseball after watching that.
I saw a tweet that said that the downfall of Team USA was picking so many Mets and Phillies to be on the
team. Yeah, basically, the entire NL East was that roster. But we'll talk a little bit now about the White Sox so we can get them all in. David Moses, our resident White Sox expert, he worked for the team last year, was on the payroll, got a ring. No, he was
sitting in Jerry Reinsdorf, his booth.
But you told me before the show, David, you are ready to roast the White Sox today. So by all means, let's hear it.
You know, I got so many points down in my laptop here about the White Sox. And, you know, as much as I love the White Sox, there's no secret that despite of the talent that we've had over the past few years, you know, we've been on a downward trajectory to say the least. You know, it just seems like you have all the talent and we get injured and, you know, you don't meet the expectations. And it seems like that's what's been the recipe the past 2 years. But we are under new management. And we've got some healthy players on the way. We've got a couple of free agent additions. I'm excited. You know, here's the problem, you know, with the Sox. And here's what I think they should avoid. The top 25% of the team's roster, as talented as they may be there, as talented as anybody else in the American League. But the depth of the team is just, I don't know. What's the right? Abysmal. It's terrible. Once one player goes down, it's like the lineup collapses. If they can avoid that, I think my White Sox got a chance. They got a chance just like, I guess that wouldn't be the case because I was going to try to make a comparison to the food at, you know, I guarantee you ate to Wrigley. But honestly, that's not a comparison. But that's my point. I think the White Sox, they'll be fine if they can stay healthy.
That's been the key for years, though, with the White Sox. And I hate to just be the devil's advocate here, but, like, I mean, you look at Eloy Jimenez, Tim Anderson. These are generational players who just can't stay healthy. And that's been really the downfall. And I do feel bad because these are great players. Like, I root for the best for these guys. Even though I'm a Cubs fan and all of the above, I want these guys to do well, especially Eloy because he was a Cubs prospect. So, I mean, it's just been tough to see. Are you going to ever let Jimenez play the field this year? Because if I'm Pedro Grifol, I say, no, you're a DH, man.
Designated hitter for the entire year. And I'm so sorry I have let this go by, and I didn't even give respect to Jose Abreu down there with the Astros. Now, I hate it, but I'm glad that he's with a real contender right now because he deserves it. He led that White Sox team for years. So many hitting streaks, so many home runs in late in the ninth inning. It, memories that he made with the White Sox, it was really big. So I hate that, you know, he couldn't stay in the black and white, but
yeah, he was a legend.
He'll be good with the Astros for sure.
Well, David, how do you feel about the strength of the rest of the AL Central? Because obviously that's another key, you know, thing to be of note in terms of their chances to be successful in the AL Centrals. You know, do you think the Guardians are still strong coming off, you know, making it to the playoffs a year ago? Do you think that there's any other teams that might be a problem, or do you think it might be an easier route for them this year?
If they stay healthy, I think it's an easier route. This is a 95. You're looking at a 95 win team, you know, if they're all healthy. I think that I like the White Sox over anybody, honestly. I like the White Sox over anybody. I'm taking them. I like my Tim Anderson. I like Yoan Makato. I like my team, and I'm going with them over anybody. I'll take them.
Their window is so large. You know, like you said, David, when healthy and when playing to potential, they could be anywhere like they were in 2021, you know, 90-plus wins. But they could also be anywhere to where they were last year in the 70s. So the window is 20 games wide if you can stay healthy. And speaking of an interesting team that could be good or bad this season, but more leaning towards good, let's talk about the St. Louis Cardinals. New identity, new catcher, and a guy who used to play for the Cubs, who I'm not going to name, and no, kidding, Wilson Contreras. And this Cardinals team that I think, I'll go out on a limb and say, I think the major, maybe the only weakness of the St. Louis Cardinals right now is, again, starting pitching.
Yeah, just need to be able to add either a couple solid starters or one main guy. But, you know, to me, that's all they're missing because they do have a lot of talent. Jordan Walker is making a huge name for himself. He was coming through the ranks as a third baseman, but, you know, definitely not going to be able to win the third baseman job anytime soon. So he's been able to move over to left field, and Cardinal fans love him. Mason Wynn, who I was able to interview, he's been having a really, really good run so far as well, 16 games. You know, Gorman doing well. I've always liked him. You know, as he was going up through the ranks, I got to watch him get drafted. I really liked him. And, you know, he's made a name for himself as well. So you've got a lot of young guys that have kind of replaced, you know, out with the old and in with the new, so to speak, that you've got people that are finally able to, you know, be just as good, just as reliable, and, you know, losing, you know, the stars that you did, losing Yadi, losing Pujols, losing Wainwright eventually here. You've got a lot of youth that will be able to make that replacement, but it's just going to take a little bit of, you know, making some trades, making some moves to the roster to finally complete it, because this Redbird team is definitely the favorite to win the NL Central, and that means the expectations are high.
you know, you were talking about Contreras. What a privilege that must be to go from Wrigley to Busch. You know, we were there a few weeks ago. Busch, that beautiful arena, beautiful stadium. I think he's going to have some fun there as well.
Yeah.
It's going to be a beautiful, beautiful arena.
Yeah, it's awesome there for sure. And really, the whole NL Central has quite the list of nice ballparks, I think.
Fair point.
The Pirates have a fantastic ballpark. If they could ever get themselves a really good team put together, that'd be a lot of fun to have some games out there, especially throughout the summer.
Our crew has babbled about stadiums in the past when we've had Hudsy on, but Joey, what's your favorite MLB stadium that's not Wrigley?
This is very boring, but I've only been to two baseball stadiums in my life outside of Wrigley, and I went to Milwaukee once, and I thought Milwaukee Stadium was decent, but it didn't really blow me out of the water.
What about like MLB The Show or video games or anything like that? Is there somewhere you love playing or anything like that?
Oh, man. This is very, I feel like it's what we like to call a chalk answer, which is very common, but like, if you go to Boston, go to Fenway Park, even that's on my bucket list.
Me too.
I think it's a great stadium in terms of, you know, the history. And
have you been to Fenway?
No, okay. I have not. But I will tell you, it is the worst stadium to load into Diamond Dynasty and see that you're playing at. It's horrendous. I hate it. But, I mean, it is definitely a beautiful ballpark and a beautiful city.
So the MLB this year, we have a lot of teams that have a chance, I would say, outright to win the World Series. I mean, the team at the top of my head is, like you said, David, Jose Abreu and the Houston Astros. They're gonna. We haven't seen a repeat World Series champion forever, but I think they're outright maybe the favorite. Mm-hmm. But there's plenty of other teams who have a big chance. So I want us all to give maybe a sleeper pick, and I'm putting you guys on the spot with a couple minutes left in this segment. A sleeper pick to win the World Series. I got mine, so I'm gonna do mine first. And how about we're going to ban the White Sox, Cubs, and Cardinals, as if any of them – well, I guess the Cardinals have kind of a chance, but as if any of them have a chance, we're going to ban them. So give me somebody else we haven't talked about. I'm going to first talk so you guys have more time to think. I'll go with the Atlanta Braves, one full year separated now from winning their own World Series. Yes, they lost Freddie Freeman, but everyone forgets they won that World Series without Ronald Acuna Jr. and a lot of players. They were great last year in the NL East. Even as the Mets had the best pitching staff in baseball, they still found a way to do really, really well. Did a nice showing in the NL playoffs last year. Came up just short, but I think the Atlanta Braves are a team to watch this year and are very close to another World Series championship.
I got one, and I think it'll be from wild card land because of the Astros. But the Seattle Mariners, if you have a team where you can nickname a player Big Dumper, for one, but also just the amount of talent that they've had, Eugenio Suarez coming from the Reds to the Mariners has really been a really nice fit, and I think that Mitch Haniger's still good, Carlos Santana. You've just got a lot of young guys as well, Ty France, Kyle Raleigh. So this Mariners team, they showed us a little bit of it in the postseason a year ago, and now I think it's time for the real deal.
David?
I think every year we say that the Dodgers are going to be a really good team, and then, you know, they don't make it to the World Series or they don't win it. You know, I think on paper they have a very talented team. I'm going with the Dodgers. I think, you know, if they can get to the postseason and really get some momentum under them, they can be a dangerous team.
Yeah, they lost some weapons this year with Bellinger and Justin Turner and a few others, but their pitching is still top-notch. And even though Clayton Kershaw's showing his age a little bit, their pitching's still top-notch, and that's another one of those Cardinals or Yankees-esque teams where it doesn't matter who's in the field, they're going to find a way to win. It's just in the way they train those prospects.
Another player I would love to see have a really good year again, Aaron Judge. You know, he had a tremendous year, historical year last year. You know, you would love to see him have a second consecutive year like that.
Were you surprised to see him re-sign in New York? Do you think did you believe the San Francisco thing for any time? Or
no, I think after a year like that, you don't have a reason not to come back. And for the money he was getting, I think is well deserved. And he made the right decision, in my opinion.
Joey, what do you think?
I am all here for the Philadelphia Phillies revenge tour. I love the signing of Trey Turner and Bryce
Captain
Harper.
Captain America.
I know Bryce Harper, he's coming for revenge, and I'm always going to be rooting for my guy Schwarber. And so he'll hit like 30, 40 home runs just for me. I
love that
forever.
Pick. I almost went with that pick too. I love all those players in the Phillies. They're so – and I mean, Nick Castellanos, JT Realmuto. There's so many players in that team that are awesome. I really, really, really was pulling for him last World Series, but – Who knows? Now they got Trey Turner, who is already going to win the NL MVP without even playing a game this year because of the World Baseball Classic. So we'll see what happens. But I like all those picks. The Dodgers, the Phillies. I went with the Braves and the Mariners. Okay, I knew it was somebody out in the AL. So yeah. That's our picks for the sleeper picks. I'm sure none of us will be right, and we'll clip that audio next October. But that's maybe for this segment. We'll come back and talk a little bit about the Sweet 16 and March Madness. You're listening to The Red Zone.
Hi, this is Paul DeYoung, former ISU Redbird, current St. Louis Cardinal. You're listening to Red Zone on WZND.
And welcome back to the Red Zone. It's the spot you've been waiting for now, March Madness. Let's talk about what's going on right now. Second half just started for K-State and Michigan State. K-State up 43-38 against Tom Izzo and the Spartans. And then out in Arkansas and UConn, UConn 34-17 in half one right now. UConn just on a tear. They're just tearing through that tournament as a four seed and look like they're not going to stop anytime soon against the Razorback team that defeated Kansas. So, Joey LeMaster, you were excited to come on and talk about March Madness. Who'd you have to win your bracket?
Well, I went very boring with my bracket, unfortunately, this year. And it's just, I just think Bama is the most complete team all around. They can score at will. And normally teams that score at will, they also allow points back in return. But that Bama team can defend. I think they're so complete. But if I were to change my pick, I love UConn. Sanogo might be my favorite player in the tournament. That guy is a menace in the paint.
So you went with Bama. Where did you actually get UConn as far as when you did your bracket before the tournament?
I had them in the Elite Eight, but
okay.
But
that's still a lot more impressive than most people. So you're probably doing pretty well in most of your bracket pools, right?
Yeah, I'm in the upper half. It's just I'm not doing good enough because you can't just choose all the winners. I had some lower picks. I had Kennesaw State going to the Sweet 16. That loss still hurts me to this day.
I had Drake in the Sweet 16. The Valley didn't run very deep this year.
We're in such a generation where the ball can go in anybody's corner at any single time. Like, I've seen so many upsets this year. In the past few years, honestly, I've seen more posts about how the brackets have been busted within the first few games.
Yeah.
Talk about that for a little bit. How do you strategize your bracket? How did you do it? What upsets did you think were going to happen, and did some, you know, go your way?
Well, after last year where I saw, like, the Elite Eight, like, if you average out all the seeds, that was, like, the highest number we've ever seen. So, like, upsets are so uncommon. But what you got to realize with the brackets, even though I just did the exact opposite, is you kind of have to play where the pool is at. Like, let's say everybody's picking Bama or everybody's picking Houston. If you want to win your bracket, you got to get the most points while being different from everybody else. So normally you pick a different winner. Like, I know people chose Purdue. That stinks. And they'll go, like, with three seeds. They'll go with four seeds. That's really the best way to go about it. But I just thought Bama was too good, so I just kind of contradicted my strategy for going about it.
No, honestly, I didn't make a bracket this year. But I have heard so many things about Bama, so I took Bama to win. That's what I've been telling people. Whenever somebody asks me, did you make a bracket? I'm like, yeah, I took Bama.
it's just so difficult to make a bracket, but that's what makes it fun. It's just that, you know, when my job is to be able to analyze sports well and my bracket is terrible, it's a little bit deflating, I would say, but it still is a lot of fun for sure. And Michigan State seems to be about the only hope the Big Ten has at avoiding another missed opportunity for a national championship. They have not, the Big Ten as a conference has not won a national championship since when the Spartans did it in 2000. So as someone that always roots for the Big Ten, I'm really tired of watching the other conferences win out. So
what do you guys think about Gonzaga this year? I mean, every single year, Ju Timmy and the Gonzaga Bulldogs for the last at least 3 or 4 years.
I feel like they have like 40.
He is. I mean, he basically is. And they have gone back to the Final Four many, many times, but no national championships during that time. Do you think it could finally be time for the Bulldogs?
According to my bracket, they can.
Really?
I had them
winning. I
didn't
even know that when I queued it in.
Uh-oh. Yeah. No, I had them winning, and the reason why was because I knew that the narrative was that Gonzaga has been underperforming all regular season, and despite that, they still won their conference. They still were able to win out over some pretty good competition there. So I had them, I think, if I remember correctly, I had them in my conference that was kind of like just everyone eating each other's young. So I think Gonzaga certainly still has a lot of talent, and I think that, you know, while I don't think they are the best team in the tournament, I think that the tournament's kind of a little bit funny like that.
They got UCLA tonight. Joey, what do you think about that?
I was just going to say, I know we're hyping up Gonzaga, but they're literally about to lose in like 2-3 hours. Unfortunately.
I saw the look. That's why I tuned in for you.
That UCLA team is just, they're so good. Even with their star player getting out, they're still arguably one of, if not the deepest team in the tournament. So it's just, we're going to get a good game tonight, no question. It's just, I just don't think Drew Timmy's going to be cooking again tonight.
Well, that's why I said that I don't think they're the best team in the tournament talent-wise, so that way I'm correct either way, technically.
Technically, you're covering all your bases here, Braden Fogerson. I don't even want to talk about it. I took Kansas in my bracket. I always do. I take them every year because I like Kansas.
That's such a generic
Kansas. Kansas, yeah, no. I take Kansas every year. I like Kansas. My uncle lives in Kansas. I visit there a handful of times, and they won the national championship last year, so that cemented, and I had them, so it cemented my legacy as never not picking Kansas, so long as they're at least higher than, like, a 4 seed. And to see them lose to Arkansas was not fun, and I also had Kentucky going to the Final Four because of Antonio Reeves.
Yeah.
That didn't happen either, so I don't intend on checking my bracket for the rest of the tournament. I just kind of intend on watching the games when baseball's not on.
Can I change my unofficial bracket pick?
Ooh.
Sure.
Okay, so I'm going to take the White Collars. They have to wear suits and ties to their classes. Princeton, Cinderella story, I think, this year. If they do that, I want each and every single one of you to take me out to eat, all right?
All right.
Okay.
If they win the national championship.
If they win the national championship.
I would even go Final Four on that. If they even go to the Final Four, I'll take you out to a three-course meal.
Final Four, you guys heard it here first. Yeah. If Mikey doesn't do it, I'm coming back.
I'll do it. We'll post it on Twitter to prove it. No, where's the farthest a 15 seed's ever gone? If they win, if they go to the Elite Eight, is that the farthest a 15's ever gone?
Has to be.
It's got to be, right? I'm going to do some quick Googling here.
Yeah,
somebody talk about something.
It's just, unfortunately, Princeton is going against my second favorite team in the tournament, Creighton. Creighton, they can shoot from three, and their center, let me make sure I pronounce this correctly real quick, Ryan Kalkbrenner, oh my God. I don't know why. This tournament, like, I just normally have fun watching the guards. The big men in this tournament, they just been special, like Kalkbrenner, Sanogo, like I said earlier, and Tezoko for Michigan State. Like, I just love these big guys, and Creighton, they can score in the paint, they can score on the perimeter, they can just do everything. And
go ahead, my bad.
No, you go. Go ahead.
You know, I don't know. Every time I think about Creighton, I think about Doug McDermott. And then I get turned off, and I'm like, nah, they're just some flops.
Do you know Creighton used to be in the MVC? That was
really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
And they won a couple years, too. They were pretty good. They're kind of like Loyola. They won a couple years, and they're like, all right, we're too good for you guys, and left.
Yeah.
I'm an idiot, by the way. St. Peter's was a 15 seed last year. I forgot about that. So they went to the Elite Eight, but that's the only other time. Mm-hmm. So they would be tied with St. Peter's, but that would also be 2 years in a row where a 15 seed made it to the Elite Eight, which is nuts. That's how do you predict that?
Well, and Final Four coming up.
Yeah, so if they go to the Final Four, they would be the first 15 seed to make the Final Four, and that would be impressive, and I would owe David a nice dinner. So we'll see if that ends up happening, David.
What are you feeling for dinner? Like a steak?
I'm not a steak person. That's the crazy thing. You know, I don't know, because I don't want to go too far away from sports. We're talking about food now. What? You got to put me on the spot right now.
We were literally talking about Cubs versus Sox food earlier.
Yeah,
we were just hungry.
Yeah, during the break,
you were some B-dubs. I don't know, something like that.
Okay. Buffalo Wild Wings? Okay. I mean, I thought you were going to tell me, like, some steakhouse or something.
No, actually, you have to take me up to, where were we at? We saw that Hooters?
Yeah. Springfield.
You got to take me to Springfield.
Okay. Oh, is that where you want to go?
That's where I want
to
go.
On the way to St. Louis, David sought out Springfield to have dinner there, I guess. So that's where Princeton is going to take us if they go to the Final Four.
I do have one thing that while we're, you know, if we're stalling or something, I don't know what we're doing right now. But I do want to mention, because I don't think anyone talks about this yet, when it comes to trying to watch the March Madness tournament, there's certain apps that you use. For example, if I use the Roku app and I'm trying to, or if I'm using March Madness app on Roku, you don't get access to CBS. It tells you to, like, use the CBS app, and then the CBS app will say you don't have access to this, even though you do. And I just feel like if you are trying to make everyone, in an age where people are moving more and more often to streaming, if you're trying to let everyone that can and wants to watch the national championship, which is always going to be on big CBS rather than the other three, you can't have it to where your app is telling people, oh, you don't have access to this, even though you do, because, you know, how else are people going to watch it other than you know, things that obviously, you know, the league mm-hmm. doesn't want them to do. And I feel like in terms of making a sport more available, they need to fix that somehow.
Didn't they run into a problem like that towards the end of last year with Aaron Judge? And he was trying to break the record, and then something, it was only on Apple TV or something like that?
Well, the blackout rules and stuff. And the final games of Pujols is run to 700 as well. We're all on Apple TV. I just feel like blackout restrictions for all types of sports are really, really ridiculous.
Yeah, they do that for the NFL as well.
Yeah, I mean, we can't get too off topic, but streaming for sports, I've noticed it too, is really, like, in the streaming age, watching sports has just become increasingly more difficult because you have to know what app it's on. You have to know if you have that service, and otherwise, I think a lot of people, myself included sometimes, are resorting to, like, online streams, and, like, there's websites that just have it all laid out. So, I mean, it's not necessarily the smartest option, but sometimes it's just, like, you gotta know where things are. Even Marquee, where the Cubs play, my TV in my apartment doesn't have the Marquee Sports app, so I'm trying to figure out how I can get that going without having to stream it.
And with the imminent collapse of Bally, there's gonna be a lot of people trying to watch their teams that are going to have kind of no idea what to do for a little bit, because it's just going to be I think the MLB has a plan definitely for all those teams that have Bally Sports as their provider, but it's just going to be a very weird and kind of maybe even unprecedented thing to see, you know, the provider of so many teams as local broadcast just like up and being unable to do it anymore.
So how about we do this to end off the show? Everybody go around and let's give predictions on your final fours.
Ooh. I was thinking about something like that. I was just going to have you guys tell me who you think's going to win tonight, but David's putting you way more on the spot
I'm
here.
I'm putting you on the
final
spot.
Four.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. I don't even know how the bracket would shake out. I'm going to say this. Whoever wins Gonzaga and UCLA tonight is already punch their ticket to the national championship is what I'll say about that. That's a hot take from me. If Joey, you know more about the whole bracket laid out than I do, so maybe you can give us four teams here.
I can speed run this for you real quick. Well, first off, a little more, I guess, heavier talked about one. I got to say, the Miami Hurricanes tomorrow will be upsetting the number one Houston Cougars.
Ooh.
Houston, I've never been more unmoved by a team in forever. They almost got beaten by the 16 seed, and then they were losing to Auburn by 10 at half, and then Auburn had maybe the worst second half I've ever seen in my lifetime. They're like 30% from the free throw line, 20% from the field, which is just atrocious. And this Miami Hurricanes team, they are so quick. They can move the ball down the court like it's nothing. So they're going to upset Houston, and then Texas is going to beat Xavier, another team I don't like. And then we'll get Miami-Texas, which will be a beautiful game, but I'm going to go my Hurricanes, a 5 seed, making it to the Final Four. And then UConn is currently beating Arkansas. That's going to stay that way. And then Gonzaga, UCLA, that's such going to be such a good game. But as I said earlier, it's going to be UCLA. And then UCLA, UConn will probably be the best game of the tournament. It will go to overtime, but I got to go with the Huskies. Sonogo, he's just a different beast, and I can't doubt on him ever. And then we go back to the left side of the bracket. Bama kills San Diego State, and unfortunately for our Princeton white collars, just – they got matched up against Creighton, unfortunately. And then Bama-Creighton will be another awesome game, but I have Bama advancing to the Final Four. So that currently gives me a Final Four of Bama, Miami, and UConn. And then finally, with the games currently going on right now, Kansas State, I think they'll hold on against Michigan State. And then I just would have never been able to predict this. Tennessee somehow makes it to the Elite Eight over FAU. They battled injuries and Rick Barnes as their head coach, so they had no right making it this far, but they found a way. But unfortunately, that stops at Kansas State, which will make them my final team in the final.
Volunteers.
You may say Princeton, what?
Yeah, Princeton, they have to lose to Creighton, unfortunately.
We got 30 seconds, Braden.
Yeah, three of my Final Four are still in it. So Creighton, Houston, Gonzaga, and then out of the East, I don't know, Tennessee will probably do it. But also, I feel like not that moved by Tennessee. Boom. So I think it's cheating anyway.
We got the Fogerson statement. We got Joey's full-on analysis, which I respect, actually. And then we got my quick hot take. David's going to want his dinner after Princeton moves on. That is your March Madness segment, and just like the tournament, that was madness. Thank you for listening to this episode of Red Zone. I'm Mikey Frinelli for David Moses, Joey LeMaster, and Braden Fogerson. Have a great rest of your night, and look forward to the rest of the March Madness tournament.
to hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 1033 WZND.
The Pulse of Redbird Nation.